If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase. Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast from a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Hey!
Hey! Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like today's episode is the first sports episode of Star Trek maybe we've ever gotten, right?
The human drama of athletic competition.
My very name is racist.
This is ABC's Wide World of Sports.
And I'm not talking about a fake sport like...
Right. Parisi squares.
Like whatever Bashir and Kira played in the holosuite that one time. I'm talking about a real sport, a real earthly sport.
A real sport that real people practice, like Anbo Jitsu.
I'd play Anbo Jitsu right now.
With the blast shield down, I can't see anything.
I'd play Anbo Jitsu against my father. Now more than ever. Ben, this is an opportunity. I feel like over the years, I've made some both thinly and not very thinly veiled remarks about your specific sports history and what I believe it to be. But I thought maybe for the open today, you and I could talk about just what our sports experience has been.
Oh, sure.
Growing up and up to now. I think that might make for some interesting chat.
Yeah.
Couple of high performance athletic machines here on the mic.
Taut, sinewy podcasters such as ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, I played a lot of different sports growing up. I was always in team sports from kindergarten on. I played soccer when I was a little kid. And then
I think a lot of kids played soccer, right? Like that might have been the entry point into sport for most littles.
Well, it's a nice sport for a little, because really all you need equipment-wise is for your mom to take you to the weird soccer store and get some shin guards and cleats. But
feel of those shin guards, the spring to the sponge of the foam on the part that touches your shin. I really like picking at that.
I remember being fascinated at the layer of dry skin that I could scrape away with a fingernail when I took the shin guards off.
Oh, that's so nasty.
It was delicious, Adam.
Little kid soccer, a great tucker out the kids sport too, right? Running and running and running.
Yeah. Let's see. Then I was, after the smash hit motion picture, The Mighty Ducks, got into ice hockey for several years.
I can't believe this. Every day with your podcasting partner, you want to make sure it feels like the first time.
Yeah, you want it every time you heat up the mic to feel like the first date.
I love that I'm still finding things out about you. This is great. Hockey. You're a tall. I think a lot of people would call you that. Were you a fast, tall bloomer? Like, were you tall for the kids your age?
I was always like one of the tallest kids in my class. I was never the tallest. Like never once in my entire elementary through high school experience was I the tallest kid in my class. But
did you have crazy growth spurts?
I did, but I didn't stop growing till I was like 25. Like I was like 6'2" when I graduated high school, and I'm 6'4" now.
My wife and I have been watching the Jordan documentary, and one of the like there's a lot that's funny about that doc. Like there's comedy peppered throughout, and one of the biggest laughs that it got out of me was like Jordan goes to college at like 6'3". Goes away for the summer and comes back 5 inches taller. I don't know how that happens. Far as I know, I stopped growing my senior year of high school.
Yeah. Vertically, I mean, anyway. I was an awkward boy. I think my feet stopped growing when I was like 10 and a half. So I have size 13 feet, and I was probably like 5'6" when my feet got to size 13.
Can I ask you a question? When I was growing, I sort of never thought I would stop. And so, like, at least in my household, you're buying for a size up to get that product longevity in shoes, in pants, in shirts. I stopped growing, but I kept getting bigger clothes, expecting that to happen. Was there a moment in your childhood where like you outpaced the growth in shoe and shirt size, and at that point you were like, "Whoa, everything is too big for me, and I look crazy."
You know, it's like you saying this is kind of blowing my mind right now because I have always wondered why. It took me so long. Like I was in like my mid to late 20s before I figured out what sizes of clothes even fit me.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
And I've always ascribed that to the kind of late 90s fashion of wearing too big of clothes, you know, big baggy pants and shirts where the seam is way down off the shoulder.
You can't come out dressed like that. You're all puffed up.
And I never made the connection that it was probably also partly that as a kid, it was just, we were firing at a moving target every time we bought clothes for me.
It was shopping for value every time. Every back to school sale was like, can we squeeze another year out of this? Yeah, that really had to influence the style for kids our age. And like you, that was something that stuck with me through college and into my first job. Like I shudder at the pictures of myself around those times. Like the dumpy mall sweater that like I had four of, that all of my friends did too.
Yeah. So I got out of ice hockey partly due to that awkwardness because I was also kind of a late to puberty person. And the kids that went through puberty early were it coincided with it goes from no contact ice hockey to full checking, like, and these kids have beards ice hockey. And I was just getting like seriously injured every single game. Like,
wow.
Like walking around at school, like working my jaw because I'd like gone down so hard on the ice that even my full face helmet had not protected me.
It's incredible to think of all the undiagnosed concussions that you and I probably had in youth sports.
I know. Yeah. So I got into Little League baseball then, and that was you know, like I hadn't done like a you know, grassy field outdoor sport since I had done soccer. So that was kind of a refreshing thing to return to. And that was something I did like kind of middle school and maybe early high school years. But
oh, yeah.
I was always at schools that didn't really have like much of a sports program. So this was all like, you know, the local park league or whatever. And eventually I got into rowing crew, and that took you know, that was like usually a practice like every single day of the week. And many days there were like double ups where you'd have to be there at like 4:30 a.m. to practice. And then you'd like go again after school and practice more. So
right.
I didn't really have a lot of time for like friends or anything when I was doing that.
Wow. So when did your sports career effectively end then?
It ended when Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers came out.
That is way too specific.
I had like achieved the thing that I had really been working hard on in crew, which was getting my 2K under 7 minutes.
Wow.
Which means you're rowing like on a rowing machine, but you're rowing the equivalent of 2,000 meters in less than 7 minutes. And it's like a test that you do periodically, and the coaches use it to assess who is going to be in which boat. But
were you
never...
ever scouted like by coaches and were like, you know, this guy might have some potential, like why not give him a scholarship or something? Like, was that ever on your mind?
It was not. I wasn't scouted, but I did like when I did my like college tour, I did like go to the boathouses at a few of the Northeastern colleges that I was interested in and like meet the, like I would have had to try out for any crew team, but, and I'm not sure if I would have gotten financial aid because of it or not, but I'm like built for that sport. Like being in like the middle of an 8-man boat and just like pulling super hard.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing that I was ever like actually that good at athletically.
Man.
But then that movie came out and I was like, I was doing that like Larry David, like, do I go watch this movie with my friends or do I go sweat for 2 hours with a bunch of kids that I hate? And I...
That's incredible that you had a specific moment like that, like a choice.
Yeah.
Because for most people, I feel like the season's over and maybe I'll pick it up next year and you just don't register for the sport or whatever.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where I'd like gotten my split down to where I was hitting that 2K in under 7 minutes, and I was still in like the C boat, and I was like, you know, I'm better than the kids in the B boat, you know, I should at least be there.
I bet you were fucking ripped, man. Like rowing as a as a sport is like one of the best full body sports you can do. Were you just totally chiseled?
It's not like a muscly sport though. It's like, cause you're out in like cold weather, like in the mornings and stuff. So you never get like, you're very lean and you have like good muscle tone, but it's not like weightlifting.
I've got some real back envy, you know, hearing about this because I'm sure your back's never going to let you down.
Yeah. The back growing up, the like back that. Does get a nice workout. I've always thought if I ever have enough space for it, that I would like to get a rowing machine as a, like, That's a workout that I like know how to do pretty well.
Yeah.
What about you? What were your sports growing up?
Back when I used to go to the gym, the rower was a thing I liked to do, but very difficult.
Yeah.
Like it's not the kind of warm up that I felt like invigorated for the rest of my workout after. It made me tired. It made me tired for the workout that followed in an unproductive way.
Oh man, it used to be like, like if I knew I had a 2K coming up on Friday, it ruined my week because it was so scary to know like that you had to like work that hard. Like just, it's a sprint, but it's like a 7-minute sprint. So it really fucks your shit up.
Yeah. Like literally everything else, Ben, I may be the one making fun of you about a thing. But I'm the one that has less experience or like my stories aren't as interesting as yours. Like, and that would go in sport and it would go in filmmaking and it would go for most things in life.
What?
I'm the mud thrower, but I,
but and it, also but it's, very self-deprecating.
It's all bullshit. Here's my sports history. Little kid soccer, just like you.
Yeah.
Very get out of the house and run yourself ragged kid was the message there. My family then moved to the Seattle area. And I don't know if it's like this where you grew up, but it felt very different to me athletically to enter in a place that took Little League baseball very seriously, very seriously. Oh, yeah. And so I thought I was joining something fun and recreational. And what it ended up being was like coach dads instilling an amount of seriousness at the expense of fun that made it really difficult to enjoy for more than a season. And so after that first season, I stopped playing. It didn't,
yeah.
I mean, and this is not to be confused with the middle school baseball league that I played on, which I don't know about you, when you're in the seventh grade in middle school, that's basically the best time for minds, bodies, and hearts to be thrown into anything competitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do your tryout, and then you get, if you're me, you think you did pretty well during tryouts, but instead are put on the, not just the JV team, but the JV team.
The EJV team? Extremely junior.
The team that they don't even have enough uniforms for, so you're wearing the girls' softball uniforms. And that's what we did.
Wow.
And some of my both favorite memories and most awful memories of middle school come from playing baseball around that time. I left baseball as soon as possible after an inglorious season. Went to play tennis in middle school, which ended up being great for me. It felt like I played both singles and doubles, and I felt like playing singles was good for the confidence, good for my athleticism. It was something I felt like I was good at, and it was fun to... That was like my first taste of being good at something. Like winning a game against a stranger is a lot when you're a middle schooler without a lot of confidence.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was...
And in a one-on-one context too, like that's crazy.
Yeah.
I never had that. I took like tennis lessons a few times and I went to tennis camp a couple of summers, but I never actually like played in any like competitive context like that. And I can only imagine what that feels like.
It felt good. I remember playing baseball one last time in middle school. I never played any sports in high school, but there was never like, I played rec league basketball like you, the Y League or whatever. And I played that for many years throughout middle school. So I do have a lot of rec league sports experience, but none of it, like I was so bad at all of them.
How bad were you?
Like, you can be bad enough at sports to where like love of the game isn't enough. Like, it does not outpace the love you have. And I really loved playing baseball and tennis, but it got to be the point where like I Peter principled my like like whatever sub Peter principle is, where like you never rise to the level of anything in spite of how much you love what you're doing. And so like there was never a Rudy moment for me where my effort would inspire others. It was just like my inability to play didn't inspire anyone and then eventually inspired me to stop playing sports.
Well, Adam, do you want to put on our Ferengi-sized baseball hats and get into the episode for today?
I feel like our Marin's running long, if only because there's not a whole lot to talk about when we discuss the diamond of season 7, right?
Yeah.
It's Deep Space Nine, season 7, episode 4. Take me out to the holosuite.
Ow! Do you realize how incredible this is? Ow! No, of course you don't.
This episode opens with Captain Sholok of the Tacumbra paying a visit to Captain Sisko. Captain Sholok is in command of a Del Sol-class ship that's docked at the station, having comported itself with a great deal of glory on the front lines of the Dominion War. They're there for, you know, refit and repairs. And Solok's there to, like, deliver his list of repairs to Captain Sisko.
God, every time we see an establishing shot of a Del Sol, God damn, best butt in Starfleet. That's a hell of a handsome ship there.
It's really an LA face with an Oakland booty on the Del Sol.
Really bounce a roll of quarters off of the back of that thing.
Set a drink on it. You can see it from the front.
Break the internet, Tacumbra. I love the trivia of this being an all-Vulcan crew. There's a dark element to that kind of thing.
There's a dark element to this whole story, which is that Captain Solak is a strident racist.
Yeah.
I don't know why he has a commission in Starfleet when his views are as retrograde as this.
He's got a Vulcan harp with a big blue string running down the middle of it.
He's got, under his uniform, he's wearing a t-shirt that says ZDZC. Zero diversity and zero combinations.
Wow. I want to talk to you about acting in this establishing scene to get a sense for whether or not you felt the way I did. There is so much like two mountain goats like bashing their horns against each other in this scene.
Yeah.
There's a quality to Solak and the Sisko's conversation here where I kept waiting for them to crack and hug. There feels like a performance aspect to this that felt so 10 out of 10 that eventually they're going to be like, ah, come on, man, bring it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, it doesn't help that the first thing Sisko says is, you got a lot of nerve coming here after that stunt you pulled.
Yeah, that there's a weird expectation of pressure release that never comes.
Yeah, and it's an interesting scene too, because Solak is standing and Sisko is sitting, and it's shot in two singles. It's cutting back and forth between them, but the camera is below the eyeline on both of them. So yeah. They're both shot in that like if you position the camera below an actor's eyes, it makes them look tall and imposing and powerful. And if like the obvious way to shoot this scene is to put the camera that is on Sisko above his eye line,
sure,
like as though it is from Solak's perspective, but then it would yield some of the power in the scene to Solak. And I thought that it was a smart choice to shoot it the way they did.
It turns out Solak's crew is obsessed with baseball. and they're obsessed with the game at Sisko, because as we learned throughout the episode, the Sisko has gone winless against Solak in every competition they've ever had.
This is an episode about a Louisville Slugger measuring contest that has been with these two men their entire career.
It's so weird that the winner is obsessed with taking Sisko down. So often in stories of competition, it's the loser that keeps trying to win over and over again until finally maybe there's a chance. But but in this story, it feels like the Sisko is just being bullied. And that's weird.
Yeah. I mean, Solak has the axe to grind of any racist, right? He racism doesn't actually hold up under any scrutiny. So racists are constantly trying to rationalize it to themselves.
Well, I mean, to take the other side.
Oh boy, Adam, I don't know. Sure you want to do that?
Well, you just cut about 13 minutes out of that episode, and we're back. I love this next scene in the wardroom where it's clear that Sisko has personally vouched for the rest of the crew's interest in having a little baseball game on the holosuite and playing competitively against Solak's team of Vulcans.
They all come in here expecting a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
About some kind of war game or serious competition. But it's a slide whistle McLaughlin group.
Right.
The deal is that Solak has like a holodeck program that he likes to run for his crew, and the competition is going to take place in the context of this program. And they've got 2 weeks for Ben and Jake Sisko to sort of whip the crew of Deep Space Nine into shape. And this starts with book learning, and there's a lot of attempted comedy
right.
with the characters studying the infield fly rule on iPads.
Fly, the term for a batted ball while it is in the air.
We cut over to Damar and Weyoun, where they have both mutually agreed to take 2 weeks off of the war for no reason. Yeah. So this really fits nicely into everyone's schedule.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice touch that they're standing there in their war room and there's a guy that walks through selling concessions.
Canar here! Get your canar here! Ice cold canar! Canar! All right, buddy! $5!
And then people pass the canar down the line and then the money gets passed down the line back.
I mean, people complain about the price of canar at the games, but it's fun because sometimes you get that giant novelty bottle with the logo of your team on it. It feels special.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's okay to overpay for special occasions.
Absolutely. And again, you know, like that's what keeps these things alive, you know?
Yeah.
That's the lifeblood of the ballpark is the expensive canar.
The Dippin' Dots at a Cardassian baseball game come in a giant spoon, don't they?
So the crew like learns the rules by book learning first, and this is a bell they ring for a long time and over a number of scenes.
Oh yeah.
It starts in ops, then it cuts to Quark's bar. In Quark's bar, Ram and Lita have caught wind of this game and are really interested in participating themselves. They want to try out for the team. Quark does not, though.
No, he doesn't, but he also wants to fit in. Like, he doesn't want to be left out of moments like these.
He should. He should be like, this is great. While everybody's on the holosuite doing that bullshit, I'm going to do crime.
That is exactly where his mind should be, on his money, but it isn't.
Yeah, he's got his mind on this baseball and this baseball on his mind, rather.
There are tryouts, is what the Sisko organizes, as if he has any more players possible than the ones that he has. You're going to make the team if you try out for the Niners, Ben.
I would have liked to see Morn in the tryouts.
This ball is crushed.
And Morn getting cut.
Here he comes on the run, and now fisticuffs.
There are a number of parts of this episode where I wondered why the focus was where it was, given the many possibilities that a story like this presents. In the holosuite, Sisko gives a speech so inspiring, we've never heard anything like it during wartime. I was like, where has this Sisko been? This is great. I'm ready to play for him.
It's about courage, and it's also about faith, and it is also about heart. And if there's one thing our Vulcan friends lack, it's heart.
He introduces the team to Jake, for some reason, the slider Sisko, who's going to be their secret weapon.
It looks like to me that he's packing a secret weapon because I was very distracted by the giant bulge that was basically center frame.
I was wondering about the athletic cup that a character like Worf might be wearing. Do you have to design it differently if you're a double-donged species?
Oh, man, I'm sure you're just coiling those up like cable inside there. But pitchers don't wear cups. But Serac Lofton does.
I never pitched in Little League. They never let me do that.
Probably couldn't find a cup big enough for you?
No, it's probably because I showed up in a cup and they're like, this guy can't pitch. He doesn't know the first thing about it.
So we have 2 weeks of tryouts with Jake's giant bulge, the Sisko's inspiring speeches to carry them through. And so we get again.
I feel like this was already like kind of a lazy bit of writing, though, because it's like, I was like, is there a tryout day and then it's practice after that? Or is it all tryouts, or is it practice that is also tryouts or something? Like the stakes that you could be cut from the team or not picked up on the team are something that I'm as a viewer, wanting them to set up and then pay off. And I feel like they half set up and half pay that off, you know?
Because the only person to get kicked off the team during practice is Rom.
Who, played by Max Krdenchik, who ironically is apparently the best baseball player of the entire Deep Space Nine cast. Did you read this?
I did, yeah. And he had to play left-handed because he could not, as great of an actor as he is, he could not act like he didn't know how to play.
He has too much game to play right-handed. That'd be plausibly bad.
Sorry, guys, I can't do anything less than my best.
Yeah. You know, they really lean on him for the physical comedy in this, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's another thing that they could have spent more time with, you know, characters being, you know, like being bad at throwing a baseball is something everybody goes through when they first learn how to throw a baseball.
Right.
And then you get better. And they had a cast of people that had a large variety of skill levels, so they could have done stuff with that, but they leave all of that stuff to Rom.
You're taking this episode way too seriously, Ben. I understand it, but
I'm trying to engage with this episode on the episode's terms.
There's so much meat on both the story and comedy bone, because for some reason, Ben Sisko recruits Odo as an umpire when he would be the most formidable batter and fielder on that team.
Yeah.
He could Mr. Fantastic the entire infield and have coverage of it.
He doesn't need to hit the cutoff, man. He can catch a ball and tag the batter out at home plate from center field.
In the event of a rainout, I can also be the tarp.
I will form a dome over the stadium and continue to play my position.
I mean, ideas like these seem to be coming from a place of this is what we can do instead of what might be interesting to do, you know? This feels like a story that is built from its constraints instead of its possibilities.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of fire in Sisko's belly early on about this. Like despite how like catastrophically shitty the team is at the outset, like he keeps kind of making proclamations like, I'm going to win this game. Like, we are going to walk off that field victorious at the end of 2 weeks.
We are going to beat them. Am I right?
Yeah.
I really admire the pluck, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what you want out of a manager, is that kind of fire.
Yeah.
And to a person, I think everyone is bringing their best effort in spite of how little talent they have for this. Like, they're straight up injuring themselves in order to do this.
Or in Quark's case, getting injured.
Knitting together a couple of bones is not major surgery, Quark.
It is if the bones are in the back of your skull.
Yeah, I mean, Quark endures a skull fracture somehow during practice.
Yeah, because Rom was just swinging the bat around without looking to see if anyone was nearby.
That's a lot of skull back there.
Yeah.
I got to believe he's going to be all right.
So we know Rom can hit the broadside of a barn.
Right. Right. Sisko knows he needs a secret weapon. That secret weapon ends up being Cassidy Yates, who, aside from being a baseball fan, is not the secret weapon that I thought she would be, you know? Like, I thought she would be the pinch hitter, you know, one to win the game for you. It's not like that.
No, but, like, she can field a ground ball, which is, like, not really something that most of the other players can do. She's like...
You want to put one of your best players at third, and I think that's where she is, yeah?
I believe you're correct with that. She's there's a lot, this is another thing that they like set up a little bit, like, okay, like Cassidy's going to be awesome, and it's barely paid off. Like it's barely like, yeah, it would have been awesome if Cassidy had like come up to the plate and like pointed at the outfield with her bat and just like dinged one.
Right.
This is like one of those, we got buried in a hole in the first inning kind of sports stories. And can we get ourselves out?
Yeah.
So they don't ever, like, none of the players ever get to do something, like, totally awesome, which is kind of unfortunate, I think. Like, I think that it would have been really fun to see Worf, like, hit the leather off of a baseball. It would have been really fun to see. I guess Esri's, like, one of the few characters that gets to do something, like, really physically amazing, except for it's just, like a man with a mustache that they got to be her stunt double for that one moment.
It's like that scene in Spaceballs.
Spectacular stunt, my friends, but all for naught.
Yeah, that was bizarre, especially because we are aware of special skills that this crew has. I mean, we got many, many episodes of Julian Bashir being great at darts, for right. example, and mm-hmm. and great at racket sports. Next to, I won't even say next to, there is zero reference made about Dr. Bashir's abilities in those areas being desirable qualities for baseball. He should be great at this, yeah. and it's not a story.
I feel like he should have been on the pitcher's mound, given his dart skills, right?
Yeah, and, like, you don't have to win the game. Like, here's the thing, like, to make Bashir
is
great...
Is Cisco a terrible coach? Like, does he just look at this team and not see where their potential lies?
I think that's the unintended subtext, because, like, if you're making a story that's like, you know, the crew comes together and rallies around their captain and does something inspiring even though they lose, you know, it's a very Bad News Bears type story. Nothing about that idea is ruined by inserting a couple of really good players onto your team. This is why really good players don't mean your baseball team is good. Like, I grew up watching the Seattle Mariners, which were like notably a team with one or two great players. They didn't go anywhere for a long yeah. time.
I mean, like, the subtext is that Cisco is a bad coach, but I think that, like, his failures are the writer's failures, right? Like, the writer failing to see these angles that could be played in his own script.
Ronald D. Moore gets the writer credit here, but I think you read this too. Like, this was a total reskin of a script that Ira Stephen Baer wrote for Fame. Like, there are plot beats and story beats in this that were lifted directly from another episode of another TV show.
Wow.
And I think when you, for whatever reason, I think if you're stepping up to the pre-production of this show and you see an opportunity to be expedient or an opportunity to be interesting, it looks like they chose the first path.
Yeah.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my latent state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
There's a bunch of scenes of people trying and failing to be good at baseball, and they're getting closer and closer to the big game. There's a scene where Captain Solak comes and, like, sits in the bleachers and watches them practice for a while, which is, like, some real stone-cold shit.
Yeah.
I mean, Solak is definitely a villain in more ways than one, and the just, like, coming and mean-mugging the entire team for a while because he's got that kind of free time on his hand as a captain of a starship is a great moment. But I'd say, like, the big bummer in the episode is when Cisco kicks Rom off the team for sucking ass.
That's it, you're done.
And kicks Rom off the team specifically for swinging a baseball bat and losing his grip on it and the bat almost hitting, for some reason, Jake.
I'll do better tomorrow, Captain.
No, you won't. You are finished. Gone. Off the team.
He's really, like, taking a wrestling amount of bumps. Like, I don't know how many takes you swing a bat entirely around your body and then hit the dirt with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's no faking hitting the dirt the way he does. It looks painful.
Yeah.
I really...
He really threw himself into this.
As a real athlete, I admire his willingness to do that.
Totally. The team really rallies around Rom here. They're like, yes, Cisco was totally out of line. He was being a complete prick, and we're going to quit so that, you know, in solidarity with you. And Rom is the one that is like, no, I want to see these Vulcans get beat.
Even if I'm only watching from the stands.
I saw this as a reverse psychology ploy. And that no one wanted Rom to play on their team, but they wanted to make it seem as though they did. Did you get a whiff of that in this scene?
I didn't pick up on that, but I like the read a lot.
Maybe my favorite part of the story is that O'Brien, unfortunately, has aggravated a kayak injury. He's going to be unable to play.
I was kayaking on the holodeck again.
You dislocated your shoulder.
And thus relegated to bench coach / first base coach duty. Doesn't stop him from doing a little bit of replicator research, and he makes himself some scotch-flavored gum.
Did someone just fuck a clown in here? I mean, really?
Doesn't that sound delicious?
I mean, it's something I would try. It's like that licorice gum, you know?
Right, yeah. I'll try anything once.
Yeah.
In Cisco's quarters, he and Cassidy sort of get into what grinds his gears about Captain Solak, and this is where we get the backstory that back in his academy days, he and Solak were in the same year, and Cisco was like tying one on with a bunch of friends at a bar somewhere.
Solak was like, "You wrestle Starfleet. you talk, but you have
Greco,
no
Roman human." I gotta say, wrestling a sober Vulcan sounds like a very specific masturbation technique.
Oh yeah. Hey, sorry I was late. I had to wrestle the sober Vulcan. You know what I mean.
But now I'm feeling very relaxed and able to focus in a way that I couldn't before.
It's actually a very effortful kind of onanism because it takes three times the strength that it usually would.
But the stakes are high for all non-Vulcan species here, because what he reveals is that Solak has basically had a hobby ever since this wrestling match of publishing psychology papers and things about what useless pieces of shit humanity are for having the capacity to emotionally overreact to somebody pushing their buttons the way Solak did.
It's so strange to think about a Vulcan acting like this. I mean, for a long time, I think we've understood that, you know, Vulcans are a very do as I say, not as I do type of people. But like the spitefulness of this Solak character to basically be the adult bully of Ben Sisko for years.
Yeah.
Comes as kind of a shock to me.
Amazing how little insight he has into his own emotional reaction to other people. But this scene ends with Ben Sisko like begging Cassidy Yates not to tell the crew about what the real dispute is here. And it's a smash cut to a secret second McLaughlin group.
Issue two.
In which she is spilling the beans about this wrestling match beef.
Let's just do a show without Pat Buchanan. A secret show.
Isn't this nice? He's not here dog whistling. It's really good.
Cut to Pat Buchanan reading all of the books that Solak wrote about racial superiority. There is some argument about, like, why not tell the team why this is so important? This is the Cassidy v. Ben Sisko conflict here. Like, why keep this a secret that there's a personal grudge happening here?
They don't understand why you're so caught up in this.
Oh, no. I'd rather they think I'm just caught up in some baseball game than pursuing an adolescent rivalry.
Also, it's not a secret. Solak publishes these papers.
It's a great point. I don't understand the choices being made by these characters in this moment.
It's not great. And the game starts and like pretty soon there's a, you know, ball that gets called as a strike situation that gets Sisko to run out of the dugout and like tap Odo on the chest and get thrown out of the game.
Rule number 4.06, subsection A, paragraph 4, look it up, but do it in the stands. You're gone!
And it's like, well, there you've got it. Like, that is what Solak needed. Like, win or lose, like, whichever way this game goes, Solak got what he came for. So, like, can we pack it up and end the episode early?
Yeah. This fucking show. The promise of Odo as umpire, I think, includes a couple of things. One of them is that in an episode that has already given you montage after montage, we were going to get Frank Drebin as umpire at a baseball game style montage treatment here, where Odo does flashy founder tricks, you know, yeah, with his gestures, and like a foul tip goes through his face and hits the backstop. Like, those are two that I just came up with off the top of my head, Ben. Like, where is the flashy, yeah, fun? Like, where's the science fiction to this baseball game?
Where is the scene where he shows up in his jersey and somebody says, like, oh, you're supposed to have like a face mask and a chest guard, and he like his chest inflates to, you know.
Yeah, you know what? The move that he made with the belt a couple of seasons ago was so great. Like, we, yeah, don't need to do that again. If you have a choice budget-wise whether or not you want him to inflate his chest protector during the baseball episode or make a belt, I mean, we know where the priorities lie. Yeah. What the hell?
Instead, the montages we get in this game are just like the camera in a static shot on the scoreboard as the innings go on and the Vulcan score goes up and up and up.
Shooting sports is hard, man. And I really noticed, I felt like they did a capable job here, but what you get a lot of is behind the pitcher angle at a batter, a pitch being thrown, and then a butt cut to a closer shot of the batter making contact with the ball.
Right.
Because that's all you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, mostly it's fine. And like, you can follow the way each play is going,
yeah,
which it's possible to screw that up.
Yeah. I like that they didn't do that thing that you see so often where they move the pitcher closer to the batter to make it look like they're throwing faster.
Right.
Like, you see that a lot in TV and movies where they fake the distance, but that's not the case. Ciroc Lofton looks like he's got some game here with his pitches in spite of giving up a first pitch dong.
What are you doing now?
A couple of other things happen here. Kira gets rolled up on a slide in the second. I wanted to jump into the screen at that. You don't roll up Kira.
Yeah, that's your girl.
Yeah.
I liked Rom being the only person in the crowd. I think this is Rom showing that he's the bigger man by still showing up for the game despite being treated like shit by Sisko. And then when Sisko is ejected from the game, showing that he's the smaller man by like not going and sitting next to Rom, going and sitting by himself in a different part of the bleachers.
That was pretty withering, right?
Yeah.
That's not fun.
pretty nasty. But
everyone's wearing a batting helmet except for Worf. Did you notice that? And like, they have bigger size hats for the Ferengi, but only a slightly bigger size hat for Worf.
Right.
It probably looked too cartoonish to give him a batting helmet going over that loaf, right?
Yeah, they just give him his first contact space helmet, and they're like, this is the only thing we could do.
Yeah.
But Sisko realizes, like, this game is not going to be about actually winning on a basis of points. It's going to be winning on the basis of heart, something that the Vulcans could never win on.
No, it's true.
And who's got the most heart on the team, Adam? It's Rom.
Yeah, it's Rom. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
Jesus.
Pinch hitting for Jake is Rom, and he is buoyed by a loving crowd that is called for on the holosuite.
Computer, come on, Rom.
Your attention, please. Now pinch hitting for Jake Sisko, number 13, Rom.
Turns out that's what he needed. He didn't need like the scrutiny of a quiet stadium. What he needed was kind of the distraction of a raucous audience.
Right. Maybe the best joke in the episode is Rom not understanding what the secret signals mean,
right,
about bunting and accidentally bunting anyways.
Right.
And he bunts his own son home.
This dive into home, I thought, was great.
Yeah.
This is so hard to make look good and athletic. And between the angle and the actor and everything, the headfirst slide was great.
Yeah. It's like Aaron Eisenberg, like 1,000% goes for it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, just seeing the loaf in the, you know, in the slide and stuff is like, it's just a fun and funny shot.
It's big fun.
So they put one point up on the board that, you know, the team empties the dugout and goes and picks up Rom and puts him on their shoulders. And Captain Solok takes great umbrage with this and tries to get Odo's attention and insist that he bring some order to the game and continue. And by making contact with Odo's shoulder to do so, Solok gets himself thrown out of the game.
The game is not over.
Mildly satisfying, I guess.
Yeah.
He's so angry that they've carried Rom off the field and the game isn't over. And I understand this.
Yeah.
I'm becoming more irate as I watch the episode. And I actually take Solok's side. Here, you got to finish the game, guys. Yeah.
Adam came to record today's episode wearing a logician's baseball hat. So
yeah, big fan. I mean, where else are you going to celebrate your big win in the rec league game? I mean, there's no Applebee's on the station. You got to take it over to Quark's.
It was always round table pizza for us.
Yeah.
I mean, if we'd ever won a game.
Yeah, that's a classic.
But the button on the episode is the big party. One thing I read about this scene is that Odo and Worf are in it, except for it's not Michael Dorn or Rene Auberjonois. It's their camera doubles. So they just put them kind of in the deep background.
That has got to be so terrifying when you're at the end of schedule or the end of day, and for whatever reason, like, two actors are not available and you need to shoot your scene.
Yeah. If you didn't get like a good look at the guy that plays Worf in this scene, I encourage you to go back and take a look at him, because he looks like a deer in headlights, man. He's like, I want to hide. I don't want to be here. Right. I don't like this.
This is not what I've been trained to do.
It's very, very funny. And Solok doesn't get it. He doesn't get why the team is celebrating. And that's kind of the point, right?
This is how he wins. Unclear how many books or papers Solok is going to write about this game or this incident in Quark's.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is going to have the desired effect that Sisko thinks it does. Solok has a very long memory and a unique attention on Ben Sisko that I don't think anything is going to break.
The final shot of the episode, the team signs a baseball and they give it to Sisko. He tosses it up in the air, and in like a slow motion fade, it crossfades to the station and we go to credits. But did you like the episode, Adam?
This may surprise you to hear, Ben, after the both of us just took our Louisville Sluggers to this thing. I love this episode.
Yeah, it's a good episode.
I thought it was so much fun. I think
like it's a rare episode that could have a script this bad and still be really fun to watch.
That makes it a miracle, I think. I think more than most other episodes, it really teases you about all the possibilities. Like, and in a way, like, many episodes are incapable of. Like, we've talked about episodes where we've come up with interesting alts that we kind of craved, but like, where is Morn sitting in the stands eating a bucket of seeds? Like,
right.
Where is the green Gatorade that obviously the Vulcans drink?
Oh, that would have been great.
And between that and like Bashir and Worf not being utilized like they could, what makes this episode fun is thinking about all of the possibilities. And in a strange way, thinking about all of them does not diminish how much fun the episode is, because I think there's something in its pacing that is just pretty fast, pretty light, pretty low calorie episode.
Yeah, it doesn't have a B story. Like, it's all A, and that's sometimes a recipe for an A that is, you know, not beefy enough to span an entire 45 minutes of television, but this keeps your interest and stays fun the entire time.
It feels like everyone is having fun on this episode in a way they can't suppress.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that fun is infectious.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool.
You know what else is fun, Adam? Is the Priority One inbox of the Greatest Generation. Do you want to see if we have any transmissions?
As soon as you began that statement, I knew I'd made a terrible mistake by closing my browser. I'm going to go find those P1s.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is from Joe, and it's to Ben and Adam. It goes like this. I started listening to TGG last year while watching TNG as my first ever Star Trek viewing experience. I'm about halfway through Deep Space Nine now, so still about 19 months behind live. It's been fun to do my first ever Trek viewing with you guys and this show. You've made me a Trek convert. Can't wait to catch up to this message and keep up the great work.
Wow. Hey, does that make Joe a gold star Star Trek fan?
Wow.
If his first time watching TNG is with us?
I mean, that's pretty special. I think really that's the ideal way to get into Star Trek.
We've really pretty corrupted much. Joe.
Indeed.
That's great. Ben, our second Priority One message is from Vadim. It is to Vadim. The message goes like this. Dear A and B, is it selfish to send yourself a birthday wish? The answer is yes, but I don't care. Happy 40th birthday to me.
Wow.
Thanks, Gil, for introducing me to the pod and putting me within Kevin Bacon range of the hosts by way of your family connection to Raz.
Wow.
Thanks to Gil, Mike, and Chaitanya for great hangs at SF Sketchfest.
Cool.
Thanks, A and B, for the amazing pod.
Oh, wow.
That reference to Sketchfest stabs me right in the heart.
Yeah.
I love Sketchfest.
I do too. I'm
good memories there.
I'm anticipating that Sketchfest is not a 2021 thing that will be happening, and that makes me really sad.
You remember the time we accidentally ordered Peking duck for the table and no one else at the table wanted a whole Peking duck, so you and I ended up just like gritting our way through as much of that as we could at like 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Mistakes were made.
It's one of the many things that is great about Sketchfest is the just total gluttony we engage in once we've done our live shows.
We've got a lot of great memories from Sketchfest, and it sounds like Vadim and co do too. Can't wait to make it back there when we can.
Yeah. Well, Adam, if people want to get a Priority One message for the show, the way to do that is by heading to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we appreciate it because it's one of the few revenue streams we have for this thing.
Gotta get that gold press lock.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology, with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for him. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
I gotta get that, gold press that.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Man, there are a lot of Shimodas in this episode. It is...
Ooh, it's a real cavalcade of Shimodas.
I mean, I can't give the Shimoda to the field the way I would like. Here's who I'll give my Shimoda to. I'm going to give my Shimoda to Odo, because you never want to be caught jacking out by... by someone. And that's what he's doing when Kira walks by his security office. He's practicing. He's practicing his calling people out.
Yeah.
And I think you got to pull the shades for something like that.
That's something you don't want to do with your back to a glass door.
Yeah, because all you see is shoulder roll. And who knows what that could be?
People are going to interpret that a lot of different ways.
What about you, Ben?
My Shimoda is Kira for a moment very early in the episode that just, it made me, it was like, it was my first laugh out loud moment of the episode. Sisko comes out of his meeting with Solok and says to Kira, like, I need you to assemble the senior staff immediately. And we cut to the wardroom and Nog is in there. What does Kira think Nog's rank is?
That's hilarious.
So for assuming that by senior staff, Sisko meant everyone including Nog, Kira gets my drunk Shimoda.
Maybe Nog is sitting down after having done the catering for the meeting. Like, he wheeled in the coffee cart.
Yeah, I could see him like sitting in a chair that's like up against the wall, you know, like you see in a high level political meeting, like the aides and assistants of the various secretaries sit in the meeting, but not at the table.
There's always a log of these meetings, but there's also the need for physical notes to be taken. And so Nog's role is to do the minutes. He's got to keep things on track.
Yeah. Well, speaking of keeping things on track, Adam, how do you feel about me heading over to gach.biz/game, where we keep the game of buttholes? the will of the prophets and figuring out how next week's episode is going to go.
Game of Buttholes, a surprise around every corner for us.
That's true. No surprise is that next episode is season 7, episode 5, Chrysalis. Bashir becomes romantically involved with a genetically engineered patient.
Hmm.
He's genetically engineered.
We both like the same beverages. Currently, that runabout is on square 55, where one square ahead is a looking at each other during, a square that you and I definitely do not want to hit.
Yeah, we don't want to get coronavirus.
We're so committed to Game of Buttholes, Will of the Prophets, that one or both of us dies.
Yeah, we break quarantine and actually buy it because of this stupid podcast.
You know what would be so, God, we would deserve it too, is that it would just be nothing but RSVP Ben and Adam on Twitter. That's our legacy.
Yeah, there it would be.
Good job by us.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
And I'm going to roll.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
And I've rolled a 4, so I've jumped over looking at each other during onto square 59.
Nice.
And that puts us in range of a space butthole and a starship mine square for the next time we roll. But for the rest of the week, people can go check out the online accounts of The Greatest Generation. We're at Greatest Trek on Twitter and Instagram, and our buddy Bill Tilly is now running our social media accounts.
Yeah, Bill Tilly doing a great job on the social media ones and twos.
Yeah, he's got 2 turntables and a Photoshop account.
Music for the show created, of course, with the help of Dark Materia, generously offering up his work to you, me, and Adam Ragusea for the theme and interstitials on our program. Can't thank them enough.
Yeah, and Adam Ragusea, of course, now YouTube sensation with the cooking channel. Just search Adam Ragusea.
This episode and every episode of The Greatest Generation is made possible by those that support it financially. You can do that by going over to MaximumFun.org/join. Get yourself on a program monthly style. It gives you access to a whole bunch of extra episodes and really helps keep the show going.
It sure does. Lots of really, really fun bonus eps up there.
With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is genetically predisposed to being great.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.